Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida lawmakers are one step closer to further changing the state's Stand Your Ground law.
You see, I want the same thing that the critics of this bill want. I want fewer people harmed by violence.
Also tonight, will Florida impose stiffer penalties on crimes committed by undocumented immigrants than the same offenses committed by citizens? Amidst constitutional concerns, the bill's sponsor thinks the court should decide.
We should not say, I don't know what the court's going to do, but I'm afraid of what they're going to say, so we're not going to pursue this legislation. The fact is, it is purely speculation.
We'll also get the latest on the health care dispute between Governor Scott and Senate Democrats and a battle among eye doctors who can't see eye to eye. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day three of week two in the 2017 Florida lawmaking session. This is Capitol Report. A Stand Your Ground-related bill passed the Florida Senate today, but not without some opposition, as we hear from Sasha Cordner.
As the original sponsor, Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley helped write Florida's Stand Your Ground law. He says it sprang from a specific case.
After nine hurricanes, many people were in FEMA trailers in their front yard, and this couple was attacked in their FEMA trailer, and this gentleman, to protect he and his wife from harm, shot and killed this intruder. And there was months and months before he knew if he would be charged with a crime.
Since that time, Baxley has gotten a lot of emails from critics. At the same time, he says he's also gotten emails from people who appreciate the law.
How about from a gentleman who said, I wish this would have been the law. My wife and I got out of a car in a parking lot. I watched her brutally beaten and raped, and they almost killed me. And I will always regret that I didn't take responsibility seriously, and I was not prepared, and I did not presume that I had the right to act.
Now Baxley favors a bill by Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley to make changes to the existing law. It seeks to shift the role of prosecutors during a pretrial immunity hearing for Stand Your Ground. In other words, the accused currently has to prove their self-defense claim to a judge during a preliminary hearing to avoid a trial, but that would now shift to prosecutors under Bradley's bill.
It puts the burden of proof where I would respectfully suggest it should rightfully be from the beginning of a criminal case to the end, and that is with the state, and that the standard of proof be beyond a reasonable doubt.
But several Democrats spoke against the measure on the Senate floor Wednesday, including Jacksonville Senator Audrey Gibson.
Why would we want to undo what the court has already told us was the right interpretation to cause the death of more people?
Gibson is referring to how Bradley's bill stems from a dissenting opinion of the Florida Supreme Court. A majority of the Supreme Court justices rule the burden should stay with the defendant and prosecutor shouldn't have to prove their case twice. Other senators, like Orlando Democrat Victor Torres, spoke about an additional burden on prosecutors from a budgetary standpoint. Foreseeing an increase in these types of cases, he says the state attorneys will need more resources.
This bill adds new burdens to the state attorney's office. The state attorneys believe that at least 15% of the qualifying cases will result in self-defense immunity hearings, will cost $12 million.
But despite Democratic opposition, the Senate measure passed 23-15. Meanwhile, its House companion has one more committee hearing before heading to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Florida House members debated whether legislation stiffening penalties for certain offenses committed by illegal immigrants were unconstitutional. Critics say it's not, but as Sarah Mueller reports, lawmakers are moving it forward anyway.
It's not a criminal violation to be in the U.S. illegally. That's why undocumented immigrants are deported rather than jailed. Cape Coral Republican Representative Dane Eagle is advancing a measure for increased sentences on undocumented immigrants for crimes like aggravated assault and murder. Under the plan, a serious misdemeanor would turn into a third-degree felony and so on. Eagle says the measure applies to violent criminals.
When it comes to some violent felons, we need to lock them up and throw away the key. And what we are talking about here are violent felons, where our taxpayer dollars should be going to incarcerate them.
Florida would be the first state to have a law like this. Courts have ruled undocumented people in the U.S. have protection under the Constitution. That means they have due process rights when accused of a crime. Eagle argues his proposal is similar to harsher penalties for hate crimes, which courts have ruled constitutional. But Scott McCoy with the Southern Poverty Law Center says not so fast. There has to be a relationship between the crime and the person. He cites a case where the Florida Supreme Court ruled it was unconstitutional for gang members to get harsher penalties for crimes unrelated to their gang association.
If I'm in a gang and I shoplift a sandwich to feed myself, there's no connection between my gang membership and the fact that I committed that crime. But if you enhance the penalty simply because I committed that crime and I'm a member of a gang, you're basically enhancing because of the status.
McCoy says using a person's nationality to treat them differently violates equal protection laws. The Constitution bars discrimination based on national origin. But Eagle says just because the court may throw out the law doesn't mean the legislature shouldn't pass it.
We don't, as a House, say the governor doesn't like this, so we're not going to pursue this agenda. Otherwise, it'd be a pretty silent session that we're having right now. The governor doesn't say the House doesn't like this, so I'm not going to pursue my agenda. We should not say, I don't know what the court's going to do, but I'm afraid of what they're going to say, so we're not going to pursue this legislation. The fact is, it is purely speculation, and until we present something like this for the court to decide on, it will always be speculation.
Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander says Eagle's legislation increasing penalties for undocumented people wastes money the state could spend elsewhere. And Ingrid DeLago of the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops says making a misdemeanor into a felony hurts an undocumented person's chance to gain legal status.
Unlawful presence is not a crime. It is a civil violation. So we cannot presume that undocumented persons have no regard for our laws, especially those that were brought as children or who did enter legally.
Eagle's legislation is still moving through committees, but it will likely face legal challenges if it becomes law. The Associated Press reports Florida lawmakers have spent more than $230 million on lawyers since 2011. The Florida Supreme Court has thrown out several laws the Republican majority legislature approved, including the state's death penalty statute, drug testing welfare recipients, and a law barring doctors from asking patients about gun ownership. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Obamacare, Trump care, whatever you care to call it, Florida's House Democratic leader is insisting you get what you pay for.
Spending less money is going to lead to less people having health care, period. I mean, my 8-year-old son can do the math and figure that out.
A fight between Florida's competing eye doctors is heating up, and physician lawmakers are concerned about ensuring patient access.
I'm a rural physician, so access to care issues are real for me.
And lawmakers say Florida should be in the business of supporting new technologies, like robots that deliver your online orders to you.
We want to be the leading and the cutting edge when it comes to technology jobs and new startups in the state of Florida.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Besides House Speaker Richard Corcoran, Senate Democratic leader Oscar Brainin of Miami is one of Governor Rick Scott's most vocal critics. Brainin took a moment to discuss some of his biggest concerns and the Senate Democratic priorities with Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash as the 2017 session got off to a rocky start.
Leader Brannon, a week and a half into the session, maybe you could describe the Democratic priorities.
Working for working people, making sure that health care is accessible and affordable, making sure that Florida takes care of the people that can't take care of themselves. Our principles are the things that guide our priorities. So far, it looks good. We've had some criminal justice reform bills that have passed. We got the unanimous verdict for the death penalty, which passed. There are several other bills moving in the criminal justice area. We still are working on the healthcare issue. On the education front, we have put some things we think in the higher ed bill that came out of the Senate that are things that we think will help people have access to higher ed and create a top-tier higher education system.
Give me an example of that.
So there was an amendment that gave the schools and their rankings more points if they take a larger number of Pell Grant students. So what that is when they're taking kids that are the needier kids that are getting that federal assistance. So if you're a school like a FAMU or an FIU, you're going to get a large amount of points in this scoring, preeminence scoring. So that was one of the adjustments that we thought was needed and helps schools like FAMU, FIU that serve these type of populations.
In terms of health care, aren't you concerned about block granting Medicaid?
We are extremely concerned about the block granting of Medicaid. That may be something that's happening at the federal level and requiring the states to move into that. And I say may because it hasn't happened yet. But, most of the writing on the wall says that's where we're headed.
You know, the Republicans say more flexibility means they can stretch dollars further. You don't seem convinced.
We've had a tremendous amount of flexibility. I mean, you name the waiver, we've applied for it in Florida. So we've been stretching our dollar, right? So let's not fool anyone that, this block grants or even if you look at the what we even call it, Trump Care, Ryan Care, insuring less people, spending less money is going to lead to less people having health care. Period. I mean, my 8-year-old son can do the math and figure that out.
You know, a lot of people criticize the governor for not mentioning the opioid crisis.
I actually wrote a letter to the governor and to the Surgeon General asking them to declare a state of emergency. So I have been, screaming from the hilltops, and now I'm asking the governor to join me as a leader in the state. People are suffering, and they're not just people in the urban communities. I hear that Manatee County has a serious opioid problem, and Manatee County, I don't have a senator in my caucus from Manatee County. There aren't many House members in the Democratic caucus from Manatee County. So these are people that are voting for him that are suffering.
House Democrats are going along with the Republican speaker's move to eliminate Enterprise Florida and to dramatically scale back Visit Florida. How do the Senate Democrats feel about that issue?
It sounds like their debate. It's their fight. That's not even there isn't even a bill here in the Senate about that. So why am I dealing with something that doesn't exist? We have enough problems of our own.
Thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash talking with State Senate Democratic Leader Oscar Brannon. After battling for years over how to make healthcare more accessible and affordable, Florida lawmakers last session landed on a compromise. Instead of expanding Medicaid to cover more people, they decided to attack the cost of care directly. They created a database to make procedure pricing transparent. Now, as Ryan Bank with member station WJCT in Jacksonville reports, lawmakers this year are looking to make it even easier for Florida patients to shop around.
James Riley is very familiar with the halls and elevators of Jacksonville's St. Vincent's Hospital. Today, his wife is having a simple surgical procedure. They've been here more than a few times over the last year, too. He says the most frustrating part is never knowing exactly what it's going to cost to get well.
If they don't tell you what's what up front, like my wife, she's having surgery, but I don't even know what the price is going to be, my copayment, I don't know yet.
Lawmakers last year hoped to help patients like the Rileys with the state's forthcoming provider pricing database. The same law also required doctors to give patients cost estimates before procedures. The thought is that if people have a better idea of what it will cost, they'll shop around, and that would drive competition, and push prices downward.
When there is some transparency with respect to what one group pays, it makes it far more difficult to charge other groups higher prices.
That's Healthcare Cost Institute Director David Newman. The nonprofit HCCI is creating Florida's health pricing database. Newman says average prices are calculated based on what insurers pay providers, not what doctors charge.
That is what we refer to in healthcare claims data as the allowed amount. So the charge data is the sticker price, the allowed amount is the actual price paid.
State healthcare officials expect the first iteration of the database to be online by July. And two measures on the fast track to passing this year could greatly expand the pricing data available to patients. One of them may even make some mindful shoppers money. Palm Coast Republican Representative Paul Renner is sponsoring a bill that would require insurers to give their customers a list of average procedure cost estimates so they can shop around. Most large insurers already do this, but Renner says his proposal would also reward patients for being diligent shoppers.
So if you go to a location where you beat that average, you share the savings with your insurer in the form of a check. And you could turn around and spend that on healthcare or some other thing.
Renner's bill would require insurers to cut a check for half of the difference between the average price and what patients actually paid, which is still cheaper for them than covering a super expensive surgery. And the pricing information they provide could come straight from the state's forthcoming database. He hopes that gets people using the tool. The doctor-run journal of the American Medical Association published a study concluding that just 10% of people use transparency tools in the first year they're online. But the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation last year found 80% of Americans who do compare prices say they'd do it again. And another First Coast lawmaker is heading up an effort to increase price transparency by pharmaceutical companies. Fernandina Beach Republican Senator Aaron Bean is proposing to expand the state's existing prescription medication database, which displays 150 of the most common drugs.
We're going to reform that bill to bring it into the top 300 drugs prescribed.
MyFloridaRx.com also shows pharmacy locations along with prices. I'm Ryan Bank in Jacksonville.
The term eye doctor is not all-inclusive. There are various kinds of eye doctors, and the two major categories of specialists in Florida are not seeing eye to eye. House lawmakers are wrangling over whether to allow optometrists to perform procedures traditionally reserved for ophthalmologists. Nick Evans reports the long-standing fight is tied up in questions of access and professional scope.
Optometrists and ophthalmologists both work on eyes, but they have a different scope of practice. Generally speaking, an optometrist does eye exams and prescribes glasses or contacts. Dr. Ryan Smith explains, an ophthalmologist is a medical doctor, which means 4 years of medical school, a year of internship, and then 3 years of residency.
And that's the first time that you can perform these procedures on your own. Optometry school is 4 years after undergraduate. At that point, they can begin seeing patients on their own.
But there are three states, Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Louisiana, where optometrists can perform surgical procedures. Optometrist Carl Spear practices in Pensacola, but he has licenses in Kentucky and Oklahoma.
To date, there has not been a malpractice claim brought against an optometrist for any of the procedures that are asked for in this bill.
Viewed one way, the fight is about money. A turf battle that's been playing out for years. And Bruce May with the Florida Society of Ophthalmology thought both sides came to an agreement in 2013.
There were many protracted hearings back in 2013. And during that process, the Speaker and the President of the Senate at the time made it clear that they were going to put an end to what they referred to as the eyeball wars.
That deal gave optometrists the ability to prescribe about a dozen oral medications, but reserved all surgeries for ophthalmologists. But now Spear argues Florida's patient pool is growing too fast.
In the year 2000, there's 19,000 ophthalmologists, 20,000. In the year 2025, there's going to be roughly 19,000. Residency training is not increasing. During that time period, the growth in glaucoma, macular degeneration, cataracts, and diabetic retinopathy will have increased about 3x. So somebody has got to be available to take care of those patients.
The question of access, with demand outpacing supply, is key for the measure's supporters. Here's Sebring Republican Representative Kerry Pigman.
I'm a rural physician, so access to care issues are real for me. And I've seen over the years the gradual decredentialing or leaving the hospital so that when the person comes in with an eyelid injury, worse than the ophthalmologist or the optometrist, you have me fixing it.
Pigman chairs the committee that took up and passed the measure Wednesday. He worries lack of access is hurting low-income Floridians, as more ophthalmologists refuse to accept patients whose Medicaid coverage offers lower reimbursements. And in pressing one of the measure's opponents, he alludes to the problem.
If there is an access to care issue and it's low Medicaid participation of the ophthalmologist, is there a way to fix that short of just increasing reimbursement? Because realistically, looking at the budget, I don't think that's going to happen.
Medical advances and competition are driving down the cost of optical procedures. House Speaker Richard Corcoran recently highlighted the field as an example of markets leading to greater choice and lower bills. But the stress of that market may be driving ophthalmologists away from less lucrative patients. Adding optometrists to the mix would likely only increase the competition. But whether that will lower costs and expand access enough to support Florida's neediest is far from certain. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Florida lawmakers want to give law officers more authority to use blood tests in routine DUI cases, but others are worried about unintended consequences, as we hear from Kate Payne.
If you drive in the state of Florida, you're automatically consenting to some testing if you're suspected of driving under the influence. It could range from a field sobriety test to a breathalyzer or urine screening at the jail. Republican Representative Sam Killebrew of Winter Haven wants more blood testing in the mix.
This bill allows law enforcement officers to obtain search warrants to draw blood for blood alcohol testing in misdemeanor DUI situations.
Currently, officers can't forcibly get blood test results for a misdemeanor DUI except under certain circumstances. The U.S. Supreme Court says it's just too invasive. Still, Killebrew thinks demanding more blood tests will keep offenders off the road. But criminal defense lawyer Aaron Waite says it's not clear that's the case.
Because at the point that they're already requesting for a search warrant for the blood, the officer already believes he has probable cause and can make the arrest. So this isn't going to increase the number of arrests. It's going to increase the number of blood tests being sent to FDLE.
The bill got its first committee hearing Wednesday. It's often a cursory review process. But this time, the bill sponsor appeared unprepared and ill-informed. Lawmakers had a lot of questions and got few answers. Here's Miami Beach Democratic Representative David Richardson.
I assume some sort of medical practitioner is going to be drawing blood. Is there anything in the bill that would address a medical practitioner that would refuse to deliver the service of drawing the bodily fluid?
Killebrew's answer?
At this time, there's nothing in there, no, sir.
And if there's no clinic nearby?
It's a good point. We have not thought about that process.
Committee Chairman Ross Spano pointed out there are other blood testing procedures in place for other criminal offenses. But would investigators be able to use the evidence for separate cases? Spano says the current bill doesn't address that.
Yeah, what I'm being told by staff is it's not specifically addressed in the bill. I'm certain, however, that it's Representative Killebrew's intent that this be confined to this one particular instance. So if there's something that we need to do moving forward to clarify that, we can certainly do that.
Representative James Grant, a Tampa Republican, saw the unanswered questions piling up and offered an olive branch.
Assuming this bill would move forward through the process, would you be amenable to working with some of us to try and maybe rein in, I think, some of maybe perhaps the unintended consequences of what this bill might potentially do?
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely.
But before the bill could come to a vote, Chair Spano called an audible. He put the committee on hold and asked Killebrew to step outside with him.
We're going
to
take a brief recess. No one go anywhere. All right? Hang tight.
When the representatives returned, Killebrew asked to temporarily postpone the measure. That often signifies lawmakers know they don't have the support they need. The move means Killebrew will get another chance to address his colleagues' concerns before they decide whether to table the bill entirely. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida lawmakers say they need to work fast to get on the leading edge of a developing new technology. Regan McCarthy reports a measure is moving through the House to clear the path for so-called personal delivery devices.
Personal delivery devices are small electric robots that travel along the sidewalk and use crosswalks. They navigate using obstacle sensing technology, and they look kind of like futuristic coolers on wheels.
I had a lot of questions whenever I first heard about this, but we have to remember that we're not looking at the business model, or this isn't Shark Tank where we're deciding if this is going to work or not.
That's Pace Republican Representative J.R. Williamson. He says the state's job is to make a framework for the technology to develop, then let the free market decide whether it'll stick around. Williamson says the technology would allow businesses to streamline their delivery services.
You would have a van, say, packed with these personal delivery devices, about 20 of them. It would go to a hub in a neighborhood. They would go out and they would deliver the goods. A email would be sent to the recipient of those goods with a UPC code. They would scan. It would unlock the personal delivery device. They would take their goods. All this can be done for less than a dollar per delivery.
And the idea is something that lawmakers like Orlando Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith are excited about.
I was reading through the staff analysis last night and I felt like I was in a sci-fi movie because I didn't realize that this technology already existed.
Representative Williamson says companies are pilot testing the technology now in California.
Virginia is, unfortunately, they're ahead of us because their session starts before us. I was hoping, and Senator Brandis was hoping, that we'd be able to get out in front of Virginia as well, because we want to be in the cutting edge when it comes to technology jobs and new startups in the state of Florida.
Senator Jeff Brandis, a St. Petersburg Republican, is sponsoring the legislation in his chamber. He attempted to pass an amendment Tuesday to include autonomous vehicle technology in the bill. The new wording would have recognized the technology in the car as the driver. That raised concerns for Dale Swope from the Florida Justice Association.
This law allows an automobile to go down the highway without anybody in it and without a licensed driver behind it. If you had been with me when I was teaching my 14-year-old how to drive on his learner's permit, you'd know what a bad idea that is.
But Brandis pushed back on that idea.
Florida law already allows you to operate vehicles. All you need is a driver's license. It doesn't say you need to be physically present in the vehicle to operate the vehicle. So we already allow everything that he just said. Everything that he just said. All you have to have is a valid driver's license, and you can operate these vehicles.
But Brandis says the amendment puts protections in place by requiring more technology advancements before a vehicle can drive without an operator. The amendment failed, but Brandis's bill without the autonomous vehicle wording passed its Senate committee. It has one committee left to go. Meanwhile, the measure in the House is awaiting a hearing in its final committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.